Good morning. This remote meeting of the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee is called to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski.
Here.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bowe.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Igo present.
I believe Representative Lee will be joining us later. Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Mecklens.
Present.
Representative Munson.
Munson present.
Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson.
Looks like we do have a quorum, members. Representative Akam, have you had a chance to review the minutes from March 22nd?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move approval.
Representative Akam moves approval of the minutes from March 22nd. Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes from March 22nd are adopted. Well, members, welcome to our markup week for our energy omnibus bill. Today we're going to do the walkthrough of the bill and take member questions. And then tomorrow we'll be taking public testimony. Members of the public, you have until 3 p.m. today to sign up if you would like to testify tomorrow. You're also welcome to submit a letter, which you can do at any time. And just a reminder to members that amendments are due by 3 p.m. tomorrow, and then on Thursday we will be doing the markup, so we won't be taking any official action on Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll be saving official action from the committee until Thursday. And so that is our course for the week, and with that, I will turn my virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have the agenda in front of me, and so my apologies.
No problem. 3337 is the bill and the motion. I'll go ahead and move my bill, House File 3337, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, would you like to walk through the bill?
I would. I do have a DE2 amendment that I'd like to offer to get the bill in front of the committee. We're not going to move the motion or adopt it, but we are going to move the motion, but we won't adopt it until Thursday. So I'd like to move the DE2 at this time.
All right. All those in favor of the DE? Oh, we're not moving it. We're just
not adopting it. Just moving it.
Yep. Okay. So
right. I'm ready.
We'll all catch up here. I apologize. I was looking through the bill, so my apologies. I wasn't focused on this. Mr. Chair, go ahead and tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Chair Akam. So members, this is our energy omnibus bill, and we are in a critical moment in our state for energy policy. As we heard in the IPCC report presentation to our committee, Minnesota is experiencing increased intensity rainfall events, increased flooding, increased soil erosion, and increased heat mortality. Yesterday, the third IPCC working group announced its report, approved by 195 governments around the world. And the report showed that the world must roughly halve emissions in the next 8 years. To put that in context, that's just two Minnesota State Senate terms to get this right. If we remain on our current path, temperatures will rise an average of 6 degrees by the end of the century, noted the report. We heard in the committee from the insurance industry, which called climate change a very significant risk to our state, and noted that we are seeing rising costs from natural disasters here in Minnesota. We will see these impacts worsen if we don't succeed, with far-reaching implications for us, our state. So as I said, we're in a critical moment, but this is also an exciting moment for energy policy. In the last decade, the cost of solar energy and storage have declined by 85%, and the cost of wind energy has declined by 55%. We heard this year from Form Energy, which is deploying the nation's first 100-hour Iron Air battery right here in Minnesota with Great River Energy. We heard from Xcel Energy on their path-breaking integrated resource plan to get to 80% carbon-free by 2030, doing so at a lower cost while maintaining reliability. We heard from the Sabathany Community Center, which reduced its energy bills by $10,000 per month with energy efficiency improvements. If we get this right, our clean energy transition will mean many benefits to our state. The clean energy transition will mean energy affordability. Weatherization can save households hundreds of dollars per year while creating local jobs all across Minnesota. But at our current rate, it would take 300 years to weatherize all eligible homes. Wisconsin, our neighbors to the east, are currently doing three times as much as we are. And this bill represents a substantial investment to weatherization, allowing us to match Wisconsin in 2023 and do twice as much as we are currently going forward. Clean energy transition will mean health benefits. Air pollution contributed to 10% of all deaths in the metro area and in cities like Rochester and St. Cloud. Moving towards electric vehicles and electric buses will simply save lives. Improving air quality just 10% would avoid 200 early deaths. This bill invests in EV infrastructure and electric buses and creates policy frameworks to support electric vehicles. The clean energy transition also means more resilient infrastructure in communities. This bill supports extension investments that will matter to Minnesota corn growers and other farmers. We fund research in weather trends to help with future infrastructure design. And we respond to cities who have told us they need help in planning for climate, both so they can do their part and so they can plan for infrastructure investments. The clean energy transition will also mean climate justice. We opened our first hearing this session highlighting the disproportionate impacts climate has on communities of color. This bill would require utility reporting to ensure they are diversifying their workforces. It helps Minnesotans with affording electrical panel upgrades so they too can be a part of the clean energy transition. And it funds apprenticeship training for communities often overlooked in the clean energy economy. And finally, the clean energy transition will mean jobs. This bill will mean jobs across a wide range of skilled professions and industries, whether that's installing charging infrastructure, weatherizing a home, upgrading a building's energy efficiency, or installing solar panels or storage systems. We remove outdated regulatory barriers to deploying clean energy. We help communities with legacy fossil fuel plants, supporting their transition and economic development. And we take the next step forward, having our state create a Buy Clean and Buy Fair program to use public dollars to support companies doing the right thing by workers and the environment. This bill does not include a number of provisions that the House passed last year, but that the Senate was unwilling to move forward on. Instead, we're focused on the practical, focused efforts that we can find agreement on to help facilitate the clean energy transition in ways that will benefit all Minnesotans. Members, the transition is happening. The only questions are whether it will happen in time, whether it will be fair and equitable, and whether Minnesota will lean in or if those jobs and opportunities will go elsewhere. I look forward to the discussion this week. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Long. And are we going to walk through with the fiscal staff, Ms. Ashley Eng? Do you have want to walk through the spreadsheet?
Yes. Let me share my screen.
Great.
Can you see it?
Yes, we can see it.
Okay, I will be discussing the climate and energy omnibus columns, starting on line 5 for fiscal year 2023. Total general fund spending is $80,686,000 and $31,360,000 in the tails. Looking at lines 8, 9, and 10, there are bills included that have a revenue impact, bringing the total general fund impact on line 12 to $80 million in fiscal year 2023 and $30 million in fiscal year 2024 and 25. Jumping down to the Energy Resources Division items, on line 23, there is $30 million in fiscal year 2023 towards the Weatherization Assistance Program, and $30 million in the tails. on line 25, there is $10 million in fiscal year 2023 towards the State Competitiveness Fund for the IIJA. On line 26, there is $10 million in fiscal year 2023 towards the Innovative Finance Authority. On line 27, there is $5 million in fiscal year 2023 towards the Energy Alley Startup Fund. And on line 28, there is $3 million in fiscal year 2023 towards solar on schools. Jumping down to line 30, there is $4 million in fiscal year 2023 towards solar on state infrastructure. On line 31, there is $2 million in fiscal year 2023 towards community clean energy transition. On line 32, there is $3 million in fiscal year 2023 towards local government climate mitigation. On line 33, there is $500,000 towards auto dealers' electric vehicle certification. On line 34, there is $4,100,000 in fiscal year 2023 towards electric vehicle charging in state parks. On line 35, there is $500,000 towards electric vehicle charging at county government. On line 36, there is $2,100,000 in fiscal year 2023 towards electric vehicle charging at rest stops. On line 37, there is $133,000 towards electric vehicle ready buildings. On line 38, there is $531,000 towards energy benchmarking. On line 39, there is $300,000 towards greenhouse gas emission reports. On line 40, there is $314,000 towards the Buy Clean Task Force. On line 41, there is $109,000 in fiscal year 2023 and $218,000 in the tails towards the public utilities consumer disputes. On line 42, there is $35,000 in fiscal year 2023 and $70,000 in the tails towards participant compensation provisions for the PUC. On line 43, there is $141,000 in fiscal year 2023 and $282,000 in the tails for energy storage. On line 44, there is $600,000 towards the U of M weather trend study. On line 45, there is $2,276,000 in fiscal year 2023 towards residential electric panel upgrades. On line 46, there is $1 million in fiscal year 2023 towards the weather resiliency program. On line 47, there is $146,000 in fiscal year 2023 towards DLI codes money. On line 48, there is $500,000 towards clean energy training. Now looking down at the Public Utilities Commission, on line 52, there is $234,000 in fiscal year 2023 and $456,000 in the tails towards public utilities consumer disputes. On line 53, there is $32,000 in fiscal year 2023 and $64,000 in the tails for participant compensation provisions for the PUC. And on line 54, there is $135,000 in fiscal year 2023 and $270,000 in the tails for energy storage. Jumping down to the renewable development account. On line 70, there is $5 million in fiscal year 2023, and $10 million in the TAILS for grants for renewable integration and demonstration. On line 72, there is $1 million in fiscal year 2023 towards residential electric panel upgrades. On line 73, there is $3 million in fiscal year 2023 towards electric vehicle buses. On line 74, there is $221,000 in fiscal year 2023 and $442,000 in the TAILS for energy storage. On line 75, there is $1 million in fiscal year 2023 and $2 million in the TAILS for solar contingency fund of the Ford site. On line 76, there is $6,500,000 in fiscal year 2023 towards the geothermal demonstration at school. On line 77, there is $962,000 in the TAILS for energy benchmarking. On line 78, there is $500,000 in fiscal year 2023 towards electric vehicle charging at county government. On line 79, there is $5 million in fiscal year 2023 and $15 million in the TAILS for solar rewards. On line 80, there is $4 million in fiscal year 2023 and $8 million in the TAILS for storage rewards. On line 81, there is $4 million in fiscal year 2023 and $4 million in the TAILS for solar on state infrastructure. And on line 82, there is $10 million in fiscal year 2023 towards the State Competitiveness Fund of the IIJ. This brings the total renewable development account impact on line 68 to $40,221,000 in fiscal year 23 and $40,404,000 in the TAILS. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Eng. And next up, we'll have Mr. Eloff walk through the DE. Mr. Eloff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be starting on page 15 of the DE2 amendment with Article 3 on energy conservation. Sections 1, 2, and 3 are from Representative Bierman's House File 3905 regarding weatherization. Section 1 establishes a state supplementary weatherization grants account where those monies can be deposited. Section 2 speaks to the use those grant monies can be used for. And on page 16, section 3 establishes a weatherization training grant program to train workers for careers in the weatherization industry. On page 17, section 4 is Representative Long's House File 4241 energy benchmarking bill, which requires owners of certain commercial and institutional buildings over 50,000 square feet to report the building's annual energy use to the Department of Commerce using a U.S. Department of Energy software program. Now on page 23, section 5 is Representative Long's House File 831. The relevant language is on page 24, which specifies that cities can adopt the most recently published new model commercial energy code prior to the adoption of that code by the commissioner of DALI. Article 4 begins in the middle of page 24, and sections 1 and 2 are from Representative Stevenson's bill, House File 3151, which establishes a dispute resolution process at the Public Utilities Commission. On page 27, section 3 is from Representative Stevenson's House File 3299. This section requires utilities to specify in a resource plan for any facility that's going to be retiring within 15 years, how that facility is going to be replaced, and also any transmission or other grid capabilities that needed to be upgraded before that time. In the middle of page 27, section 4 begins Representative Long's securitization bill, which extends for 8 additional sections. Some language changes have been made since we heard this bill. It deals now with extraordinary events rather than retirements of facilities, and is specifically for natural gas utilities. And it extends to page 43, where we have section 13 at the bottom of the page. Also, Representative Long, this is his House File 3614, which increases the minimum amount of when facilities are sold by utilities that's required for PUC approval of those sales. It increases it from $100,000 to $1 million. On page 44, section 14 is from Representative Holland's House File 1289, establishing a new process for compensation for participants in Public Utility Commission proceedings. At the top of page 49, section 15 allows the Department of Commerce to act after a PUC decision has been made at a hearing, but before the written order is actually issued by the commission. Section 16 concerns the alternative site review process that the PUC oversees with respect to sites and routes for large electric generating plants. There's an alternative process, and you can see on line 4928, this says that high voltage transmission lines in excess of 200 kilovolts and less than 30 miles in length in Minnesota would now qualify to undergo this alternative site review process, which does not require a second site or route. And the repealer on page 50 repeals the current language in statutes referring to the participant compensation process. Article 5 on energy storage begins in the middle of that page. Sections 1 to 4 are from Representative Holland's House File 4393. Section 1 discusses how the capacity of distributed generation can be calculated when energy storage systems are a part of that system. Section 2 at the bottom of the page requires the Public Utilities Commission to initiate a docket to decide how owners of stored energy storage systems would be compensated when their storage is dispatched or requested by a utility. Section 3 at the top of page 51 requires utilities to specify in an integrated resource plan how energy storage systems may contribute to the achievement of the state's renewable energy standard, greenhouse gas reduction, and solar energy standard goals. Section 4 requires that energy storage systems be addressed in distribution studies that utilities do. And at the bottom of section 5 is a storage rewards incentive program that provides a lump sum grant to customers that install storage. That's from Representative Long's House File 4402. It requires Xcel Energy to file a plan with the Public Utilities Commission as to how that program would work. At the bottom of page 52 is Article 6 of Renewable Energy, and the first two sections are Representative Akam's House File 384. Section 1 specifies that when state buildings are meeting the Sustainable Building 2030 standards, once they have incorporated all economically efficient energy conservation measures, they must then turn to solar, thermal, or renewable energy standards to fully meet those standards. Section 2 specifies that any solar energy generating systems that are on state buildings limits their capacity to 120% of the electric demand of the building. Turning now to page 54, Section 3. Is from Representative Long's House File 4402 on the Solar Rewards Program. And you can see in the middle of the page that the bill increased the amount going to that program from 5 to 10 million in fiscal year 23 and 24 and extended the program to 2025 at $10 million a year. On page 55, section 4, this is Representative Pinto's House File 3907, and it establishes a contingency account. Members may recall that this bill concerns the site of the former Ford plant in St. Paul's Highlands neighborhood, on which a solar array is planned to be installed. There is there may be contamination under the ground from the Ford plant that the public that the Pollution Control Agency may require to be remediated, and the contingency account is to be used in case the array has to be taken down and then put back after that remediation is completed. On page 57, section 5, this is Representative Long's bill from 2021, actually, House File 1397, which makes some changes in the Community Solar Garden Program. Towards the bottom of the page in paragraph B, it increases the maximum capacity of the solar garden from 1 to 3 megawatts. The language at the very bottom of page 57 relaxes the requirement that the facility and subscribers must be in the same or a contingent county if the facility has a setback of 100 feet or more from the nearest residential property. And turning to page 58, subdivision 3 has a number of consumer protections for community solar garden subscribers. And page 59 and 60 speak to a community access project that are projects that have more than 50% of the capacity of a solar garden taken up by residential subscribers. At the bottom of page 61 is section 6 from Representative Stevenson's House File 3299. And you can see at the bottom of page 62, the new language there specifies that wind and solar projects that the commission ordered in the most recent integrated resource plan of utilities are exempted from the certificate of need process. Section 7 on page 63 is from Representative Long's House File 4654, which expands the types of schools that are eligible for the solar-owned schools program to include a tribal contract school. Section 8 on page 64 is from Representative Ryer's bill 4404, which provides money for local units of government to install solar energy generating systems on public buildings. At the bottom of page 66 is section 9. This is also from Representative Stevenson's House File 3299, which expands the definition of solar energy generating system to include any transmission lines of 100 kilovolts or less that interconnect the system with a high voltage transmission line. The next section, section 10 on page 67, says that the PUC, this is regarding the siting of electric generating plants, and this provision says that the PUC may not require an alternate site for solar energy generating systems that was not proposed by the project proposer. The next four sections, 11 through 14, are from Representative Wozlowick's bill on homeowners associations, specifying the conditions under which solar energy generating systems can be placed on residences within condominium associations. That extends to page 73, where section 15 is the photovoltaic demand credit rider, which we heard. And the repealer in section 16 is repealing the current statutes on solar state buildings that are made unnecessary by House File 3084, Madam Chair. Which brings us to Article 7 on page 74, electric vehicles. A lot of these sections are from Representative Stevenson's House File 1668 from 2021. Sections 1 and 2 establish a hierarchy for the preferences of electric vehicles in the state vehicle fleet. Section 3 on page 75, towards the bottom of the page, specifies that electric vehicle charging stations can be installed in state safety rest areas. It's from Representative Lippert's House File 3220. On page 76, Section 4 requires auto dealers selling electric vehicles to have at least one employee who is has been certified as having been trained by through a training course that's organized by the Minnesota Motor Vehicle Dealership Association dealing with electric vehicles. Section 5 is also from Representative Stevenson's House File 1668, and it requires Xcel Energy to submit a plan for electric vehicle deployment, transportation electrification plan, by June 1st, 2023. And this lays out what the context of the plan should be. Which brings us to page 80, section 6, the electric school bus deployment program. This is from Representative Holland's bill, House File 4653, which allows public utilities to pay the incremental cost of electric school buses over fossil fuel buses. On page 82, section 7, this is again from Representative Stevenson's bill. It provides grants for manufacturers who need to be certified by the manufacturers of electric vehicles before they can sell them. And this bill would allow grants to defray the cost of that certification. At the bottom of the page, and at the top of the next page, 83, are four sections from Representative Long's House File 4066, which deal with the building code, requiring the building code to address electric vehicle spots in parking in commercial buildings. At the bottom of page 83 is section 13. This is from Representative Bierman's House File 1853, also from last year, which would establish electric vehicle charging stations in state and regional parks. And section 14 on page 84 is Representative Bowe's bill from last year, House File 2234, which would provide funds for electric vehicle charging stations at county government centers. At the bottom of page 85 is the start of Article 8 on economic development, and section 1 makes a change in the renewable development account that is actually in the middle of page 90, and it says that construction projects funded from the renewable development account under this section must adhere to the provisions, the prevailing wage provisions in statute. Section 2 on page 90 is from Representative Christensen's House File 3985, which allows community energy transition grants at the Department of Employment and Economic Development to be accepted on a continuing or rolling basis. Sections 3 to 8, beginning at the bottom of page 90, are from Representative Stevenson's House File 3299, and they deal with local workers being used for utility projects, maintenance, and for new construction projects throughout the state. And that extends all the way to page 94, where in the middle of that page is Representative Lippert's bill regarding the property assessed clean energy program, the commercial aspect of that program, which expands the kinds of projects that can be treated under PACE to include water conservation and some agricultural projects as well. Section 12 on page 96 is from Representative Long's 4654. It's actually, much of it is taken from Representative Lippert's bill in 2021, establishing the Minnesota Innovation Finance Authority, a nonprofit organization that would finance energy conservation and renewable energy projects. On page 102, we have section 13, the Energy Alley Startup Fund, also from that same bill, which would begin a fund to provide grants to businesses developing decarbonization technologies that are not yet commercialized. And section 14, beginning on page 105, also from the same bill, grants for renewable integration and demonstration would provide funding for grid modernization projects and renewable energy technologies as well. On beginning on page 107 in section 15, also from Representative Stevenson's House File 3299, the new language is at the bottom of page 108. This is a list of factors that the commission is to consider in designing sites and routes for electric generating projects, and this adds three new considerations they must make: impact on socioeconomic factors, employment and economic factors, and enhancement of environmental quality. On page 109 is section 16, which is also from Representative Stevenson's bill. At the bottom of the page, it requires that, well, it prohibits any site permit for electric generating facilities of 50 megawatts or more be awarded a site permit unless the contractors and subcontractors are agreed to pay employees no less than the prevailing wage. And on page 110 in section 17, the same provision applies to wind projects of 25 megawatts or greater. At the bottom of page 110, the Community Energy Transition Grants appropriations is extended from 2022 to 2025. That brings us to Article 9, greenhouse gas emissions, beginning on page 111. Section 1 concerns the calculation of the social cost of carbon that's used by the Public Utilities Commission when it's looking at new generating facilities. Section 2 on page 112 is from Representative Liz Lagarde's House File 1978. It establishes a task force to examine the possibility of integrating into the state's procurement process for certain kinds of materials, information that companies should submit regarding the environmental, especially the greenhouse gas impacts of manufacturing those materials. At the bottom of page 113, section 3 is Representative Vang's House File 2200, which awards grants to political subdivisions that organize new committees to deal with climate change, to both reduce the amount of climate change produced in the city and also to deal with adaptation to climate change. That brings us to Article 10 on page 115. And Section 1 is actually from Representative Richardson's House File 1592 from last year, which requires organizations receiving grants from the RDA to report on their the commitment to increasing the diversity of their workforce. And at the top of page 120 is section 2, the Minnesota State Competitiveness Fund. This is also from Representative Long's 4564, which provides money to match federal funds awarded by the U.S. Department of Energy and to help Minnesota successfully compete for federal funds. At the bottom of page 121 is section 3, which is from Representative Hollins's House File 3897, which would provide grants to homeowners increasing the capacity of their electric panel upgrades. It applies both to single family homes and also to multifamily residences. Section 4 on page 125 is actually the grants for renewable integration and demonstration again. So this will be taken out. It somehow ended up there twice. On page 127, section 5, utility diversity reporting requires utilities themselves to report on their actions taken to undertake increased diversity in their workforce. That's again from Representative Richardson's House File 1592. At the bottom of page 128 is section 7 from Representative Christensen's House File 3985, which requires a decommissioning and demolition for coal-fired plants. And on page 129 is Representative Holland's bill from last year, House File 1647, that would require the Department of Commerce to provide technical support to help establish and operate a tribal advocacy council on energy. And the last thing, Madam Chair, is at the end of this bill on page 130 is a repealer that repeals the provision from 2017 exempting the need for a certificate of need or for a site permit for a gas plant to be located on the site of the Sherco 3 plant. That concludes my presentation, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Eloff. That was helpful. Before we move on to member questions, we've got just a couple of people who will provide some brief testimony. First, we have Kevin Lee, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Commerce. Mr. Lee, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Vice Chair Akam and Chair Long. For the record, my name is Kevin Lee. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Energy Resources at the Department of Commerce. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you all for your work on this bill, to express our appreciation for including many of the governor's budget priorities. And we also wanted to just highlight a few of the items that are in here and hopefully with the goal of making them a little bit more concrete. First and foremost, we wanted to talk about the State Competitiveness Fund. I wanted to highlight the fact that the programs that this fund would make us competitive for that are getting up and running right now at the federal level are focused on a couple of areas. One is on making our electric grid more resilient. What does that look like? So the programs that are getting started have portions dedicated to public and rural electric cooperatives. So this could mean things like a rural co-op that has a need to install new transformers to weatherize their power lines, whether, you know, burying them underground. And these funds would allow those entities to be competitive without putting their ratepayers' funds at risk. There are also programs getting up and running right now around clean hydrogen that would leverage our statewide expertise in storing hydrogen as ammonia at the University of Minnesota Morris. All of these programs have applications that are starting in 2022 before the next legislative session gets going. Many of them have a required match, and we will miss out on those if we don't dedicate funds to them. So those funds will go directly toward making our state competitive with other states for both formula and competitive grants. The second issue I wanted to highlight is weatherization, and I wanted to right off the bat recognize the significant level of funding in this bill, and we appreciate your dedication to this very important issue. Just yesterday, there was a news article I saw that I'm sure many of you saw about the wide number of income-eligible houses that are not able to qualify for federal funds for weatherization because they have, you know, these houses have roof problems, they may have asbestos, they may have mold. And so by providing funding to address those issues, you know, not only are you permanently reducing energy costs for people who need those reductions the most, you're also addressing some very serious health concerns for folks that could otherwise not afford to address those threats to their health. I would also highlight the Solar for Schools program, an extremely popular program, fully subscribed, on track to exhaust all available funds. So this will help get more school districts involved. And lastly, I wanted to highlight the three energy financing proposals in here, the Energy Alley Startup Fund, the Grants for Renewable Integration and Demonstration, and the Energy Innovation Finance Authority. All of these provisions are about growing the next generation of clean energy businesses right here in Minnesota, bringing those jobs home. But it's not just clean energy businesses sort of the way that you might think of them. Something like the Energy Innovation Finance Authority could also help farmers financing more efficient grain drying, affording anaerobic digesters. It could be a church that's looking to install, you know, a heat pump system to save them money on their bills, but they need help affording those upfront capital costs. So those proposals and all of the other ones that we mentioned are a significant step forward And we thank Chair Long, Vice Chair Akam, and all the members of this committee for your important work on this bill. It's a great step forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lee. And before going to our next testifiers, I'm going to turn it back to Representative Long to say a few words.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I just wanted to introduce the next two testifiers that I've asked to join us. And this is for a provision that is included in our omnibus bill that would provide grant funding for helping with clean energy jobs, pre-apprenticeship programs for two segments of our community who are often left behind. And I'll let the testifiers speak to that. But this bill was heard in the Labor Committee and in the Workforce Committee. We didn't have a chance to hear it in our committee, so I just wanted to make sure that we got these folks on the record for the week.
Great. Thank you, Representative Long. First up, we have Mr. Rod Adams, Executive Director of New Justice Project. Mr. Adams, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Come on, camera. Okay, great. Good afternoon, Chair Long, and thanks for the introduction. And also the members of the committee. Just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning in support of the Green Training Program within the Climate and Energy Omnibus Bill. So my name is Rod Adams. I'm Executive Director of the New Justice Project. The New Justice Project is an organizing hub, but also a worker center that connects Black Minnesotans to jobs, resources, and issues related to workers' rights, public safety, and democracy. So most of the population that the New Justice Project serves are Black youth and formerly incarcerated folks who live in North Minneapolis. For the youth we work with coming out of high school, not everyone wants to go to college, but you know, their job options are often very limited. And many folks don't want to stay in service jobs or can't turn those jobs into a career. For the folks coming out of incarceration, their criminal records are usually a barrier to work, and they often don't have the support they need to get back on their feet. Now, this bill would fund community organizations to partner with union apprenticeship programs to create real pathways into green construction careers. This bill would leverage what community organizations do best, reach into our communities, engage our people into opportunities that can change their lives. We have folks that come into our current program because an aunt or maybe a mother or a grandmother came to the community meeting or talked to one of our organizers. Now, that aunt or grandmother isn't interested in construction work, I would hope not. But they went home and talked to their nephew, and he came down to our office. Grassroots community organizations have the ability to both grow and diversify the construction workforce. And we have trusted and lasting relationships that ensure that those individuals can succeed. Furthermore, I've experienced what a good union job looks like firsthand. So my father spent 5 years in prison. When he got out, he joined a union and got a job at the airport. 10 years ago, he bought a house and paid for my brother to go to school. For the folks we work with, a pathway to a green construction job is a pathway to a real career and economic mobility. It's an opportunity to address the wealth divide facing Black families and other families of color in Minnesota. And right now, Minnesota, of course, has a gap in the workforce, and we need our green economy future. This legislation invests in a unique partnership designed to fill that gap and to build generational economic stability within Black and brown communities. So I just wanted to thank both the chair and the members of the committee for including the green training program in this legislation, and also for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adams, for your testimony and for the work that you do. Next, we have Maricruz Lozano-Rios, Program Manager with Unidos Minnesota Education Fund. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Long and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning in support of green training and part of the Climate and Energy Omnibus Bill. My name is Maricruz Lozano-Rios, and I am the Program Manager with Unidos Minnesota Education Fund. Unidos Minnesota Education Fund is a grassroots organization rooted in immigration and first-generation youth in the broader Latino community across Minnesota. The COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated the racial inequities in the Minnesota labor market. Beneath these disparities lies the reality of occupational segregation. Black and Latino workers are far more likely to work in low-wage sectors in our economy, the same sectors hardest hit by the pandemic. BIPOC workers need more opportunities to enter fields that offer good wage benefits and real career pathways in the green training program within this bill. and this bill would provide that much needed pathway into green construction careers. Winnie the Minnesota Educational Fund is ready to contribute our knowledge, skills to build these strong pathways. We bring deep expertise in reaching and engaging excluded communities, especially the Latino community and children of immigrants and refugees. We are skilled at developing training and services our community members need, and we provide that support in culturally appropriate ways. And we bring the ability to cultivate strong and network and mentorships rooted in shared cultures and experiences. Construction is a field that passes from generations to generations. And I know from my own experience, my father has 23 years of experience in wood framing. I grew up watching my family work in construction, and I did a two-week program myself to begin to learn timber framing. In my work, I often talk to young people, both men and women, about the value of trades as a future career. Children follow their parents into construction work who had followed their grandparents before them, and relationships and skills transfer from generation to generation. And this bill provides the opportunity to build deep traditions for people of color in the trades. And this bill brings the community we work with into the trades so that their children and their grandchildren can follow in their footsteps. Thank you for this important legislation and for the opportunity to testify. Thank you, Chair Long.
Thank you for your testimony. And next we will turn to member questions. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, a couple questions. Number one, for Representative Long first. I was, you know, I got a list of what the governor's requests were in this bill versus what was put in. Why, it seems like there's just five things from the governor and the rest are brand new. Is there a reason for that?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Grunhagen. We included most of the governor's requests, and if you're looking at the spreadsheet, that those would be lines 23 through 28. We were unable to find funding for line 24, the wastewater and drinking water energy feasibility, but otherwise we funded the governor's programs, not at the same levels always as what the governor requested. In terms of the rest being new, no, if you look through the spreadsheet, I think you will find them very familiar for the hearings that we've had over the course of the year.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for that response, Chair Long. My next question is, you know, the state competitiveness account is to leverage federal money for clean energy investments, which is a governor request and was also included. So we're putting $10 million into it. How much federal money will be matched from that?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's a great question, Representative Grunhagen. I'll give a brief answer and then see if Deputy Commissioner Lee would like to chime in as well. So we're putting in $20 million to the fund, 10 from the general fund and 10 from the RDA. This was the governor's request. And my understanding is that there are 60 plus grant opportunities that were established by the bipartisan infrastructure bill passed in December in the energy area. These are all competitive, so they're ones that we would need to apply for to be able to get those opportunities. And they range quite a bit. There's, I know, funding for transmission reliability and build out. There's fundings for different clean energy research centers as well. So they, some of these might be funded in collaboration with our university system, for example. But part of the challenge right now is that the federal government is pretty slow to get out the criteria for a lot of these programs. And so we don't have them right now for, I think, any of the programs that are in our area. And if we waited until next year, then we might miss our chance to apply. And so we're in a kind of a tough spot given our legislative schedule that we could be leaving quite a bit of money on the table, but I'd ask Deputy Commissioner Lee maybe to speak to the sums that are potentially available to come to Minnesota.
Commissioner Lee?
Yeah, Chair Long, Representative Grunhagen, that's a great question. That's absolutely right. At a basic level, we're talking about many billions in federal dollars running through those 60 to 70 programs that DOE is staffing up. To get a little bit more specific, you know, the governor's budget ask for $20 million was based on a base of around $100 million plus that is estimated for formula funding for a couple programs specifically out of DOE. We are anticipating a 15% match for that. And so that is where you get some of the sort of base numbers from the governor's budget request. That is, you know, there's a fair amount of uncertainty, as Chair Long mentioned, about other programs that may start taking applications going forward. There's always, of course, a risk of being underfunded there. So, but this budget ask was based on the programs that we know are starting to get rolled out and will be taking applications soon. Those are the grid hardening, grid resilience programs are two of the main ones that are going to get kicked off first.
Thank you, Commissioner Lee. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks for that response. That helps clarify a little bit. It sounds like a lot of this stuff is in the future, so we'll have to see how it works out. Just a couple comments then is, you know, I know that some of these green jobs provide opportunities for certain people, but it does come at a cost because the history of alternative energy is increasing the cost of electricity, which hurts our low income and poor and businesses. And so that is a trade-off. And unfortunately, it hurts far more people than it will help, in my opinion. The second thing, I did a little bit of research this last week, and what I found out is that Russia is supporting a campaign, the country Russia, supporting a campaign opposing our fossil fuel industry in this country. They also are supporting the alternative energy industry in this country. Now, isn't it interesting that as the price of oil goes up, they make billions of dollars, which helped fund the war in Ukraine, and we're sitting with non-base load electricity for the rest of us with exponential cost. I think members need to think that through, and this bill takes us a big step in cooperating with the direction Russia wants us to go. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Long, would you like to respond?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. On the costs, I think, unfortunately, Representative Grunhagen, you're just plain wrong. The costs are moving the other direction for renewable energy. I cited the statistic in my opening comments about solar costs decreasing 85% over the last decade and wind costs decreasing 55%. Wind is now the cheapest power that you can own in the state of Minnesota. And if someone offered to give you a new wind farm or an existing coal plant, you'd take the new wind farm because it would be cheaper to build a new wind farm than to run the coal, pay for the coal fuel to operate an existing coal plant. So we heard, I think, loud and clear from Xcel when they presented their integrated resource plan that moving towards clean and renewable energy is the cheapest and most affordable option for all Minnesota ratepayers. And in terms of Russia, I'm glad you brought that up. I think that we certainly know that if we're going to be sustaining our efforts to cut ourselves off from Russian oil and gas, to not fund a government that is causing havoc in Ukraine, that one of the best ways we can do that over the long term is to move to reduce our demand for oil and gas. And so I think the electric vehicle provisions in this are, because of that, a very patriotic thing for us to do.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Representative Grunhagen, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll respond to Chair Long's comments on the House floor if and when this bill makes it there. Thank you, because I disagree.
I'm not seeing any other comments or questions. We'll give it a minute here. Anybody thinking? Seeing none. Representative Long, did you have any final comments?
No, Madam Chair, no final comments. I just am looking forward to our discussion for the rest of the week. And I know tomorrow we'll have be hearing from the public, and on Thursday we'll have an opportunity to make amendments. And I look forward to the process with this bill in committee.
Well, then with that, I think our agenda is done for today. So thank you, everyone. And this meeting is adjourned.